Hi, welcome back to the channel. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about shipping, and more specifically, the shipping of oil and liquefied natural gas, and the insurance that relates to that. And this is potentially going to be a massive issue for both Russia and also the global economy. So in today's video, we'll look at exactly what's required in terms of insurance relating to these ships. We'll talk about who's providing that insurance right now. We'll talk about the impact of the sanctions. We'll have a look at some of the biggest oil spills that have happened globally and what the cost of cleaning up that oil spillage was. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is likely to happen with regards to global shipping insurance and what the impact of that will be on the global economy. So before we get into all of that, if I can ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, and also please subscribe if you haven't done so already. I'm still trying to get to that magical 100,000 mark, getting closer every day, but still some way to go. And don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look in the description below where you'll find links to Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon and YouTube Super Thanks feature. And I'm delighted to tell you that today's video is brought to you in conjunction with Masterworks. Russia is the world's largest exporter of oil and exports around 8 million barrels of oil per day. And currently around 2/3 of those barrels are sold directly to Europe, the vast majority of which are provided by the pipeline infrastructure that Russia's installed. Now, as you'll be aware, most of the countries of Europe have come out and stated that they no longer want to buy Russian oil. So Russia needs to find new markets. And the most likely markets for it are India and China. And if we assume for the time being that the secondary sanctions are put on hold and that Russia is able to actually sell that oil, then the challenge for Russia is really to find the logistics to be able to move that oil. Now, they do have a land border with China. However, to install pipelines will take a lot of work and investment and agreements with the Chinese authorities. So in the short term, they won't be able to transport the vast majority of the 5 million barrels of oil that they need to move that was previously going to Europe. So the only real option for them is to load it onto tankers and to move it by sea. And in the world of shipping tankers, there are 5 different sizes and classes. The smallest size of tanker can hold around 500,000 barrels of oil and are called Panamax, as these are the largest vessels that can fit through the Panama Canal. Aframax vessels are named after the average freight rate assessment system and can hold roughly 1 million barrels of oil. Suezmax tankers are so called because these are the maximum size that can fit through the Suez Canal and they can hold roughly around 1.5 million barrels of oil. Very large crude carriers can hold around 2.5 million barrels of oil, and ultra-large crude carriers, of which there are only a very small number in the world, and these vessels can't even fit into most ports. They have to dock outside of ports and then have some sort of transfer arrangement. They can hold up to 3.5 million barrels of oil. So if we assess how many ships Russia needs to charter in order to move the 5 million barrels of oil per day that it is currently selling into Europe, we're looking at 5 Aframax, 3 Suezmax, or 2 very large crude carriers per day. And in order to work out how many carriers we need in total, we need to look at the average sailing time between Russia and China. This chart shows how long it takes to sail between various ports in China and a variety of ports in Europe. And as you can see, the on-the-water times range between 48 days and 22 days. So if we assume that a ship will take 30 days to sail between Russia and China, that means it will be a 60-day round trip, which would mean that Russia is going to need between 120 and 300 tankers, depending upon the size of tanker used, in order to move 5 million barrels of oil per day. As with all other forms of transport, shipping requires comprehensive insurance. You need to put insurance in place for a variety of reasons. Firstly, you need to protect any damage to your ship, but also any damage to a port or any other physical object that your ship could run into. You also need insurance in terms of your crew, but one of the key things for an oil tanker is that you need insurance to cover the eventuality of some form of environmental disaster. If your ship springs a leak for some reason and starts leaking huge volumes of oil into the ocean, somebody is going to have to pay to clear all of that up, and you will be liable. So therefore, you need comprehensive insurance in the event of some sort of disaster hitting your ship, because these things are incredibly expensive to sort out. And in international waters, you'll be entirely liable for any damage and costs associated to that damage. The insurance market for shipping has been built up over a very long period and is dominated by a small number of players. And maintaining sufficient insurance to be able to transport the largest volumes of oil amongst any country in the world is potentially going to be a massive issue for Russia going forward. But before we get into all of that, let's talk about a couple of examples of oil spills that have happened in the past and what the associated costs were. The Exxon Valdez was an oil tanker owned by Exxon Shipping Company. On the 23rd of March 1989, the Exxon Valdez left the port of Valdez in Alaska and was bound for Long Beach, California, and reportedly had 53 million gallons of crude oil on board. Just after midnight on March the 24th, the ship struck a reef in Alaska's Prince William Sound. The impact of the collision tore open the ship's hull, causing 11 million gallons of crude oil to spill into the water. At the time, it was the largest single oil spill in US waters. Initial attempts to contain the oil failed, and in the months that followed, the oil slick spread, eventually covering 1,300 miles of coastline. Investigators later discovered that the captain of the Exxon Valdez had been drinking at the time and had allowed an unlicensed third mate to steer the massive ship. Exxon eventually paid around $2 billion in cleanup costs and a further $1.8 billion for habitat restoration and personal damages related to the spill. Prior to this disaster, Prince William Sound had been a pristine wilderness, and it's estimated that this oil spill killed 250,000 seabirds, 3,000 otters, 300 seals, 250 bald eagles, and 22 killer whales. It also played a major role in the collapse of salmon and herring fisheries in Prince William Sound in the early 90s. Fishermen went bankrupt and the economies of small shoreline towns, including Valdez and Cordova, suffered in the following years. Estimates of the potential economic loss as a direct result of this oil spill were as much as $2.8 billion. In addition to the potential for an oil tanker sinking, there's also risks relating to the actual drilling rigs themselves. On the 20th of April 2010, the BP-owned Deepwater Horizon oil rig, which was located in the Macondo prospect in the Gulf of Mexico, exploded and sank and resulted in the death of 11 workers who were on board. 4 million barrels of oil flowed into the Gulf of Mexico over an 87-day period, making this the single largest worst disaster in oil history. The oil well was finally capped on the 15th of July 2010, and on the 15th of December, the United States filed a complaint against BP Exploration and Production and several other defendants alleged to be responsible for the spill. The total cost of this disaster to BP was over $65 billion, which included the cleanup costs and all of the legal fees relating to the largest environmental disaster in US history. Before we go any further, I want to say a few words about today's sponsor, Masterworks. Today, all investors face a dilemma. Inflation is at its highest level for 40 years, and the Fed is going through its most aggressive phase of money tightening ever. Top firms are predicting returns of less than 5% through to 2035. And restructuring your portfolio has never been more difficult or challenging. So where can you turn? What sort of assets are available? JP Morgan recently advised that alternative assets were something that seriously needed to be considered. And one thing that's caught my eye in terms of alternative assets is Masterworks. Masterworks has solidified itself as the platform for investing in contemporary art. Masterworks enables you to access exclusive art from the likes of Banksy and Monet for a fraction of the price paid for by billionaires for such pieces. Roughly two-thirds of all billionaires allocate between 10 and 30% of their total portfolio to art, partly to diversify and partly to provide a natural hedge against inflation. And that makes sense because between 1995 and 2021, contemporary art outstripped the S&P index by 164%. And art has also exhibited the lowest correlation to equities of any single asset class. So if you believe that the equity markets are on the way down, then this could be an asset class worth considering. Since inception, Masterworks have sold 3 artworks, all of which provided a return of over 30% to investors net of fees. As with all investments, there is no guarantee that past performance is an indication of future success, so you need to do your own research here. But if you are interested in Masterworks and you'd like to support the Joe Bloggs channel, then you can skip the waitlist by clicking in the link in the description below. The world of shipping insurance is dominated by a small number of players, the vast majority of whom are all located in Europe. And the biggest player internationally is the International Group of P&I Clubs, which accounts for around 90% of all ocean-going tonnage. So in order to give you a better understanding of how the market works, let's have a quick look at a video produced by the International Group themselves.
Shipping is perhaps the most global of industries, with over 90% of the world's trade being carried by sea. Without shipping carrying goods across the globe, it would simply be impossible for most products to be delivered. Whether it's a container ship transporting household goods from China to Europe, a car carrier transporting cars from Japan to the United States, or a cruise ship operating throughout the Caribbean and beyond, they will need high levels of insurance cover, including to satisfy the legal requirements at ports around the world. In order to provide this cover, the 13 P&I clubs that comprise the International Group have established a claims sharing agreement underpinned by the world's reinsurance markets that allows for each club to provide high levels of insurance cover for each individual ship for each incident that occurs. This arrangement comprises 3 building blocks of cover. The first block comprises a layer of insurance provided by the P&I club that is insuring the ship, where that club retains the first element of cover on its own. For claims arising from any one incident that exceed the limit of this first block of cover, the second block then provides a simple but highly efficient cost-sharing system, where each of the 13 international group clubs share claims arising from a maritime accident involving the insured ship. This is known as the International Group's pooling arrangement, which can be traced back to 1899 and the first agreement between P&I clubs to share claims on a collective basis. The third block that sits above this cover extends the limit of insurance provided to ships within the international group clubs by means of a collective purchase of high levels of reinsurance from the world's reinsurance markets. This third block of cover brings together approximately 80 reinsurers from across the globe, including over 20 of the world's top 25 reinsurers. This reinsurance is purchased annually by the International Group on behalf of the 13 clubs and their shipowner members. It is obtained on advantageous terms due, in part, to the large volume of ships and wide range of vessel types, with a corresponding spread of risk and relative predictability of claims. With these 3 building blocks combined into one single insurance policy, the international group clubs are able to provide the highest level of insurance cover available to shipowners worldwide. This insurance cover is a key factor in enabling world seaborne trade to operate, restoration of the marine environment in the event of pollution, and compensation for both public and private claimants of maritime accidents. This can only be done by the 13 international group clubs coming together as one, to share claims and purchase high levels of reinsurance on behalf of their shipowner members. The International Group, collectively stronger.
So as I mentioned earlier, this industry has grown up over the last 100 years or so and is dominated by these 13 companies. This is the list of the 13 insurance companies that make up the International Group of PI Clubs. 8 of these companies originate from the UK, 2 are from Norway, 1 is from the USA, 1 is from Sweden, and 1 is from Japan. So 90% of the shipping insurance market is provided by countries that are all party to the sanctions against Russia. There are no Russian companies, there are no Chinese companies, there are no Indian companies in this group. Insurance is a very specialist field where you need to know what you're doing, you need to be able to assess your risks, and you need to be able to spread that risk. Because no single insurer wants to take multi-billion dollar risk on one particular event happening. And that's why the concept of reinsurance was developed in the market, to enable individual insurance companies to offload risk above a certain limit. And this chart shows how the reinsurance structure has been built up for shipping insurance. And essentially what this shows is that all of the insurance companies in this group have the ability to offload excess risk to the other parties. So in the event of having a very large claim being more than $100 million, they won't take a single hit on that. They'll be able to look to the other parties who will share that risk. And when you're looking at something like the Deepwater Horizon oil rig disaster, which cost $65 billion, there is no way on earth as an insurance company that you can take that sort of risk. It's impossible. It would put you out of business in the blink of an eye. So the market therefore relies upon the collective risk spreading agreement that's been built up over a very long period of time. A good example of a country that produces lots of oil that's had sanctions applied against it is Venezuela. Worldwide sanctions were introduced against Venezuela in 2019. However, there are lots of reports about Venezuelan oil being disguised and making its way into a variety of markets. Now, the insurers of these ships and vessels are aware of these practices taking place, and they're now looking to clamp down on all of these practices. The international group has identified the main ways that ships look to deceive their insurers in order to undertake deliveries of sanctioned oil. All ships have an automatic identification signal which enables it to be tracked in terms of its location. A very simple way of trying to avoid the sanctions is to switch off this AIS, which then means that nobody can track where the ship is going. Another form of AIS misuse is to clone another ship's AIS signal. And a more sophisticated version of this is to actually create a false GPS location. Other forms of avoiding the sanctions include physically altering the vessel's appearance, such as changing the colour of the deck or the hull, or covering it with a tarpaulin, changing the name or the IMO number of the vessel, or even re-registering as a false identity. Other forms of avoiding the sanctions include creating false documentation in terms of what the actual cargo is and where it originated from, and transferring the oil to another ship to mask its identity. So we can see from this that the insurers are fully aware of how people are trying to avoid the sanctions, and they are now closing in to make sure that as much due diligence as possible is done, and cover will be removed if ships are found to be breaching the sanctions. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because up until now, I think everybody in the world has been assuming that the oil that Russia is currently selling into Europe can easily be transferred to India and China. And in theory, I guess that's possible. But the practicalities of moving massive volumes of oil on a daily basis, we're talking about 5 million barrels of oil every single day that need to be relocated away from the pipelines that are currently serving all of the European countries to China and India. Now, in the short to medium term, all of the deliveries would need to be made by ship because it's not possible for Russia to be able to build a pipeline overnight to be able to take these sort of volumes. So if we assume that they're having to put everything onto ships, then all of that cargo will need to be fully insured. If oil leaks from your ship for whatever reason, it can be very expensive to clean that up. So the insurance needs to be provided by specialists who know what they're doing. And as we've covered in this video, they want to share the risk. No single company wants to take the risk that if your ship runs aground and spills millions of barrels of oil into the ocean, that they would have to cover the cost of that and potentially go bankrupt. So finding insurance for all of this shipping could very well be the Achilles heel in Russia's plan to change all of its sales to India and China. Because if it can't get the insurance, then it won't be able to move any of that oil. And it is very interesting that all of the major insurance companies are based in Europe and America. You don't have any major shipping insurance businesses that are in China or India or Russia. So they would have to enter into a new market. These companies would have to start covering risk that they've never covered historically. And that would be a really big move by India and China to make that decision. And this point really goes back to a video that I posted recently talking about the secondary sanctions. So as soon as Europe manages to free itself from buying Russian oil and gas, it will then be in a position to be able to start applying secondary sanctions to India and China. They will be told that if they buy Russian oil once it's fully sanctioned, then they would also be open to those same sanctions being applied to their nations. So that's a big decision for India and China to make, on top of the fact that they now have to consider providing sovereign guarantees in the event of any form of oil disaster. So that's a lot of pressure being applied on those countries. And if China and India decide that they don't want to cover that insurance risk, then all of the risk would then be passed back to Russia. And Russia would then potentially be taking the full risk of anything going wrong in international waters. So I don't think that it's automatically guaranteed that Russia will be able to sell all of its excess oil to India and China, because if it can't get the insurance, then it can't load up those vessels. And if that does happen, then we'll have real problems in Russia, because if they can't sell and ship that oil, then that means that they will have to reduce their output, and that has major implications for oil drilling. But in terms of what the potential impact of all of this is on the global economy, unfortunately, it's more bad news. Because if we get to the situation where India and China can't buy Russian oil, either the secondary sanctions are fully in place or Russia just can't find anybody to insure those vessels, then that means that they will have to continue buying oil from all of the other oil-producing nations, and that means that there'll be an increase in demand, and of course that means that it will push up prices. So the likely outcome if Russia can't find markets for its excess oil is that we will see a further increase in global oil prices as demand for the limited stock that's available from everybody else goes up, and therefore that will push inflation higher, because the price of oil feeds through into absolutely everything. Most things need to be delivered, therefore there are transport costs. So we'll see further inflation, which means that we're probably going to see further increases in interest rates to offset that increasing inflation. And that's going to put more pressure on people who've got debt, and therefore it will reduce the amount of disposable income. And it's all pointing towards a global recession. So I think it's really interesting to talk about how you ensure the movement of Russian oil. But if they can't get that insurance, it means that they won't be able to move that oil, they won't be able to sell it, and therefore increases the likelihood of a global recession. So hopefully you found this video interesting, educational, and informative. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Hey guys, just a quick one on Joe Blogs 2. As you know, we are now monetized and ready to go. So if you're thinking about making a video, if you've been working on something, please contact me, send it over. We'll post it up on the channel and see how it goes. But thanks for watching this part of the video, and thanks for watching this whole video all the way through to the end.